Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
I do tend to get quite graphic in a bodily functions way, if that's all right.
Yeah, that's fine.
Because I have to justify the title.
Yeah, go for it. That's okay. Let's see what comes out.
I'm Beth Morrie, and this is One Torn Every Minute, the podcast where we talk about giving birth. Today, I'm joined by the spectacular singer-songwriter Sophie Ellis-Bextor. Hello.
Hello.
Sophie, can we plunge a hand straight up your cervix?
Go for it.
By summarising how many times that you have given birth and when?
So I've had 5 babies. My eldest is 16 now and my youngest is 1. Given birth fairly regularly over the last decade and a half. although I've actually only ever had cesareans. I've never had a natural birth, which we can... talk about.
That is really interesting, and we love a mix of... vaginal and I can't say it unless I say it like Miranda. I'm so sorry. Vaginal and cesarean births. We love the diversity. You are indeed then an expert in cesareans. 5 times.
Yeah. And actually they did sort of get easier the more I had. I didn't want to have a cesarean at all. I wanted to have a natural birth with my first baby, and I'd been reading up about it lots, and I wanted to have what I think is called an active birth, where you're basically allowed to sort of walk around and listen to music and kind of go with the flow, really. I thought that sounded cool. I was feeling sort of quite, what's the word? Is it excited about the idea of seeing how well I would cope in childbirth?
I think it's also known as naive.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. But I never got to experience it. I've never had labour. I got to about 7 months pregnant and I just wasn't coping very well with pregnancy at all. I felt lousy. I didn't feel like I was blooming. I felt unattractive and puffy and just a bit wrong, really.
Or even in the first time, because lots of people feel okay in the first time when you don't have a child to look after.
But I was really struggling. I thought I was going to really love it and I just was not, it just wasn't really suiting me. And I remember thinking, oh, well, maybe I'm just one of those people who just isn't very good at this. And then I went for a checkup, a routine checkup. And obviously I was like a 24-year-old mother-to-be. So I was under the sort of minimal amount of supervision, really, because I should have been low risk for lots of things. So I'd gone along for a checkup with a midwife and she said, oh, your blood pressure is really high, actually. Can you take these pills and come back on Monday to have a check? And she's like, you don't need to make an appointment or anything. Just pop in and see us and we'll just check your blood pressure and see how well you're responding. And over the weekend, I did some reading up and I read a chapter of my pregnancy book. And it was only a really small bit, really, where it sort of talked about anything not going to plan. And it said something about something called preeclampsia. And it listed all the symptoms. And I thought, that's me. I just know it already. I know that's what it is. And it was both like really scary and also a bit of a relief.
Yeah.
So the next day I went for my checkup and Richard couldn't find any parking space. So I just sort of ran in, didn't have anything with me. And they took my blood pressure and they were like, you're not leaving. You're not going home and you're going to have your baby this week.
Wow. And how pregnant were you? Did you say only 7 months?
Yeah, I was 31 weeks. So I thought I had ages to go. You know, I hadn't had my antenatal classes. I hadn't packed a baby bag. I hadn't even bought anything for my baby, actually.
Wow.
And Richard had only moved in to start living with me 3 weeks before because we'd only been going out for six weeks when we found out we had a baby anyway. So it was all a bit fast forward. Really.
That is quick by any standard.
I know.
Um,
Yeah.
I've got so many questions now because I'm thinking, okay, you didn't enjoy being pregnant. You have this quite scary experience and you have gone on to have 5 children. So I'm thinking trooper.
I don't think it is being a trooper, actually. I think it probably goes back to that word you used before. It's like naivety, really.
Yeah, but you're an old hand now. You know how it works.
I know bits about how it works. I feel like I might have experience, but I'm not an expert. That's how I sort of feel about myself, really.
Yeah.
I think the pregnancies have got easier, luckily. And I think basically I had my first 2 really early. I got ill again with my second, but I kept asking the consultant. I quite liked the idea of having a big family. And actually my second pregnancy, I enjoyed a lot more. I felt fit and healthy and active. So when I got sick, I was quite surprised because I hadn't been feeling rubbish like I did the first time around.
Yeah.
But then I felt like I just want to have more babies. And I asked the consultant, they said, oh no, you've been quite unlucky really to have got ill twice. So you should be all right the third time, basically. So I kind of thought that was enough for me to give it a shot.
Well, what I do in this podcast is I would never ask anybody to choose their favourite child, but I do actually ask you to choose your favourite child in this podcast, in that I like to choose one birth to focus on. So we tell the story of that birth while dipping into the others. And obviously by favourite, I sort of mean the opposite of that. Like, what's the kind of most dramatic and interesting birth according to you? What do you think?
That's really tricky to answer, actually, because
it's often the first, but not always.
I think the most traumatic was definitely the second. I think that was the one that really affected Richard and I a lot more, because with the first one, I mean, yes, we had a premature baby, but it was still our first baby and we were really excited that he was here. And And also my sister was born really early when I was 11. So I'd sort of seen a happy ending come out of a premature baby. And I think once he'd had all his initial checks and he was, you know, his birth weight was all right and his gestation was all right. So I was kind of, I focused on the positive. But then with my second, he was born a bit earlier, a bit smaller, a bit more complications. And I think that one was the one where we just thought, oh, wow, this could really not go as well for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to take you to that second one, when what year are we talking?
So that was 2009, the beginning of that year. So my first child, Sonny, was nearly 5, actually. I think he was about 4.5 when I got pregnant. So it was really near his 5th birthday when Kit was born. And I'd been having this really good pregnancy, actually. Having been so ill with my first one, I was really enjoying being pregnant the second time, and I'd kept really, it was a bit weird. I think I went a bit loopy. I'd never been a gym bunny in my whole life, but I'd started going to the gym after I had Sunny. And so when I was pregnant with Kit, I started going to the gym a lot and I felt like, yep, I can do this. So I was going 3 times a week and I even took up this really weird martial art called Krav Maga, which I've literally only done in my life during that one pregnancy. It's like, I look back on it, it's so out of character.
That is so odd. Do you think it really was the fetus, like, talking to you?
I think what it was is that I'd felt probably a little bit out of control with the first pregnancy, and I think this was a way of me feeling like, no, I'm feeling great. And I felt quite sort of trim, so I was sort of one of the, this is not, by the way, how I am now, so I can talk about it in reflection because it's not me now, but at the time I was sort of quite athletic, and I had this kind of quite neat baby bump, and I think I just felt really, really clever, like, look at me, I'm doing so much. But funnily enough, I think that's also probably why I got ill, because
you were doing too much.
Yeah, I think I was raising my blood pressure and my heart rate, actually, with the exercise. And look, there's still loads of research going on now about preeclampsia. But my own theory is that my exercising and my, because I had a lot of stress with my first pregnancy, so I think that raised my heart up. But I think with the second one, it was exercise. So since then, for the last 3 pregnancies, when I'm pregnant, I don't do any cardio, nothing like that. I keep my life as peaceful as possible. Really,
well, that's quite good, really, isn't it? Because it allows you to, you know, put your feet up.
Well, I wouldn't say I stop work. I quite like working when I'm pregnant, but I do. I just definitely don't go to the gym and try and be really silly active. For me, it just didn't suit my. I felt like it wasn't right for me.
Yeah.
I'd been really active with my second pregnancy, and in fact, I found out I was ill by accident because I had a gig I was supposed to do in Russia, And my consultant, I'd said to her, oh, can I have one of those letters that means I can still fly?
How pregnant were 30, you at that point?
I was 30 weeks.
Wow.
And she was like, well, you can, but you have to promise me you'll come and see me for a checkup the day before you fly. So I actually already had the bit of paper, so I could have just not bothered going and just gone away. But I was like, I better go and see her. I promised I would. And when I got there, she said to me, oh, I'm so sorry, but you're not going anywhere. In fact, you shouldn't even really go home. I should put you in hospital, but I'm going to let you go home and I'm going to let you pack your bag. And you've got days left before you have this baby, not weeks. So we kind of...
So no Russia.
no Russia. So I kind of walked home in a bit of a daze, really, with Richard, and we just couldn't quite believe it was happening again.
And were you hoping to have a natural birth, having had the cesarean first time round, or was that made clear that you weren't going to be able to?
No, I'd hoped to have a natural birth. In fact, I also tried to have a natural birth on my third. I was really keen on it. I think, you know, what an amazing thing that we're so lucky in the Western world with the healthcare. But I think it's quite a rude ending to pregnancy if you're, you know, 7 months pregnant and then that's the end of it. Because there's so many stages. And when you read a pregnancy book, it's also fixated on the full 9 months. So when you miss out on the last two, it feels really odd.
Yes. I mean, 2 weeks would be okay. Mine came 2 weeks early and that felt like a shock. But 2 months is just, it must be just such a fundamental shaking you to your core because you expect to have a certain amount of time and you don't have it.
Yeah. And also there's lots of things that happen at the end of pregnancy to get your baby ready. So their lungs aren't as developed. There's, you know, parts of... their mental and physical development. And nature's really clever. It does it in stages. So you don't have your lungs prepared because you're not going to need them just yet. So that all happens at the end. So if you're having a baby early, they'll give you steroids to try and give a last minute boost to their lungs. And then they're born trying to hit three markers, really. So they're aiming to get them so they can feed by themselves, they can monitor their temperature by themselves, and they're monitoring their breathing by themselves. Those are the three things. They have to hit those marks before they can be discharged. When Kit was born, it turned out that my placenta hadn't been working very well. So he was really tiny. He was only 2.5 pounds.
That's so tiny.
He really was. He should have been probably more like, I don't know, like 3.4 or something like that. But he was, 2.6. So there was this microscopic little thing and I just felt like I'd really let him down, actually.
Well, I mean, that is a common emotion in pregnancy and indeed motherhood, is to feel like you've let someone down.
Yes.
But just to take you back to that moment when the doctor said, you ain't going to rush it, you're probably coming back to hospital. What happened next? Did you went home and packed a bag? Is that...
I did pack a bag and they put me on some pills, very, very strong pills this time to try and lower my blood pressure. And they were so strong, it basically turned me into sort of Eeyore type. And I remember my mum and my sister coming around to visit me. And I decided that day that I was going to bake a pie. And I basically spent the entire day baking this pie. My thoughts were so laboured. But, you know, I made the pie. But, it was just a really weird day.
You've learnt your martial art and you've made your pie.
Exactly. A weird pregnancy.
It's sending you off at very strange tangents.
That was on a Wednesday, I think, and on Thursday I went to hospital, and then I think they delivered him on the Saturday, because they basically monitor you really carefully and try, and every day further you get is sort of seen as a really important thing. So he was born at 31 weeks in the end.
And with other cesareans that I've heard about, there's a kind of triage and you sort of arrive in the morning of your planned cesarean, having had nil by mouth.
Yeah.
And then you kind of wait and they sort of order the cesareans in terms of who's most of an emergency.
Yeah, exactly.
And I've heard about people having to wait. Did you have to wait a long time or were you sort of straight in?
I was that emergency. I was the person who went in front of other people. Yeah. Basically, with my first and second baby, I was really quite unwell. And I don't know how much you know about preeclampsia. I mean, I wouldn't know about it if Anne had it.
Not really, not much.
But... okay, so the eclampsia comes from the Greek word for coma, or lightning, actually, but it's basically, it happens really quick. So if they don't get it right, then the mother can go into a coma and die. So in the olden days, it was the most common cause for maternal death, and it's most common in first pregnancies. And it's quite a bespoke illness. So for some women, they can have a sort of bubbling preeclampsia that they can monitor and it responds really well to the drugs. And with other women, it's like a runaway train and they try and halt it and it doesn't really work. So with me, both of those ones, the time between diagnosis and delivery was really quick. And then I was also quite ill after I had Kit. I went into intensive care because my symptoms just didn't really alleviate. So he went straight to an incubator and I went to intensive care. So I didn't really see him that much for the first couple of days.
Do you feel that, like, you know, that whole experience, having to go in so suddenly and all this worry, I mean, did it take away from the joy of that experience, the one that we always associate with that experience, the excitement?
Yeah, I'd say yes and no, because I'm quite a sort of pragmatic kind of person. So in my mind, there was never an alternative reality where I was walking around a sunny street with my baby in a pram. You know, I was either going to be still pregnant or we were both going to be in hospital. I couldn't really see a third option. So
yeah,
I suppose the bit that I found tricky really is that when your baby's in hospital, you get discharged, but your baby's still there. So Kit was there for 6 weeks. And so you've got this bit where you're going in and visiting, but I also had a little baby, you know, kid at home. So life is continuing with that. And people don't know if they're supposed to say congratulations. And as new parents, Richard and I were able to go to the hospital, visit Kit, and then go and sit in a restaurant and have supper nearby the hospital. So in a weird way, you're like, you know, you've got a newborn, but you're out having time together. Like, all these things are sort of happening in a weird order.
Yes. And I imagine, you know, there's a kind of, you know, you're not looking after a baby, but on the other hand, it's not right that you're not looking after a baby.
Exactly.
And it must be awful.
Yeah, it just makes you feel a bit discombobulated, really. And there's lots of, you know, medical treatment going on. And when you get there, you've got to sterilise your hands over and over before you touch your baby. And you don't really look at the other babies that are in the same room because they're regarded as patients. So, and if you see another parent in there, you tend not to really talk to them or make eye contact because everybody's going through their own thing and you don't know if it's appropriate that you chat. I remember one time going to visit actually my first baby, and I went into the room he'd always been in and he just wasn't there. And they'd moved him through the night into another room and they dressed him. So I wasn't the first person to put his clothes on.
No.
But it's okay because I really feel we're so lucky because we were always heading towards the day when they'd been discharged. You know, it just, there are so many people where that it's not got any momentum to it, you know, or the shape of things has got a lot more uncertainty. So for me, I was like, well, this is obviously not ideal, but they're getting all the care and sooner or later they'll be strong enough to come home and then we can kind of start again and say, okay, meet my baby.
I mean, hard as childbirth is, I mean, we live in a time at least where we're lucky enough to receive care. And as you've pointed out, you know, 100, 200 years ago, that would not have been the case. But it still is, it just sounds so tough to go through that. Can I take you back to that cesarean? Can I ask you about drugs? because it's a big topic of conversation, whether you're giving birth naturally or by cesarean. Everyone's intrigued by the drugs that we get given and whether we react to them nicely. Is it like an epidural for a cesarean where they just do a full on block?
Exactly. So that you can be, poor Richard, he made the schoolboy error of standing up to see the baby while I was on the operating table. And I think that's really not recommended.
You were scarred for life. He was scarred for life.
I was actually fine. I was like my top half, my normal top half, but he looked over the curtain. So he's seen
parts of me
I'll never see. I think he's got overexcited and thought, oh, the baby's out. And then it's like, oh, and so is my wife's innards.
Hello, I'm Jack Beaumont. I do Crime Club. In Series 1, I spoke to people like this.
Did you not kick a policeman in the head?
Yeah, that was... When was that? I was 17. Wait, was I 17 or 19? I think it might have been 19, actually.
In Series 2, I talked to people like this.
There was a paedophile with one leg. I kicked him clean out his wheelchair. About four of us... we battered him.
And this.
Cheated on your boyfriend to give him gonorrhea? Do you want to go there, or would you rather not?
Yeah, no, I could talk about it.
I have jingles like this. Crime Club. That's Crime Club, where strange people tell stories involving bad behaviour. New episodes out every Monday.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well,
HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
We talk about that as well, the fact that, I mean, often I'm not very sympathetic towards my husband when I give birth because I'm just not that nice. But how dreadful it is for them that you're going through this atrocious thing and they are completely powerless. There's nothing they can do. They don't know what's going on. And it's really horrible to not be able to do anything and have your hands tied, metaphorically. Did he feel that? Was he a tower of strength or was he sneaking off to Pret-a-Manger?
You know, he's brilliant, actually. I mean, Richard is the opposite to me in a crisis, really. He's sort of calm and together and quite practical. So, yeah. No, I could really, every time I've had a baby, it's the time when I'm also allowed to properly switch off. And to be honest, I put myself in that equation a little bit too, because I'm actually quite a bad patient. So I think Richard and my mom and people around me are quite good at being like, no, you've just focus on taking your time. I can always be in a little bit of a hurry to get better, to get up, to get and do things because I feel awkward about taking time off. But no, Richard's been really good
at taking time off to give birth.
Well, yeah, because I mean, it's so weird, but at the time, because the baby had come early as well, I mean, I remember my manager coming to see me to visit. So I think I was definitely still in hospital. I remember him sitting on my hospital bed. So I must have been within a week. And he literally said to me, good news, we're bringing out this single that I've recorded. And he's like, and we'll record the video in 10 weeks. So literally 10 weeks later, I was on set doing a video. And my best friend from school was helping me do my milk. So every 3 hours on the video set, she'd come and say, okay, it's time for you to go and express.
I mean,
I was barking. What the hell was I doing? I
thought you were going to say your manager came and said, listen, we've rescheduled a flight to Russia. You'll be on a plane.
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't have surprised me. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioning your mum makes me realise I've got a fun fact for you.
Go for it.
My fun fact is that we are linked by birth.
Yeah.
Your mum presented Blue Peter with Peter Duncan, mm-hmm. who is married to my lovely midwife, my second
Annie.
Child. Yes.
She
was my midwife. Amazing. A wonderful, wonderful midwife. I would marry her if I could.
I've heard nothing but lovely things about her midwifery.
Oh, God, she was good.
Yeah.
So I don't know, we're second childbirth cousins want to move in some way.
Exactly.
I just want to take you, having talked about the drugs, this sort of block that they do, did it work? I mean, were you numb? Could you feel anything?
No, you can't feel anything at all. But you are also completely awake. So, you know, you lie there and we had music playing and we'd made like a little, I think it was a CD back then of, you know, a little playlist. And I was chatting away and it's quite surreal because the surgeon and the consultant and all the doctors, they're all sort of chatting to each other and talking about their plans for the weekend. And it's all very odd. But I quite like the oddness of that because I'm reassured by the fact that it's very normal. I mean, they'll do, I don't know how many C-sections a day. So I find that all really comforting. I quite like the sort of mundane stuff that runs alongside the big drama of it all, really.
I agree. I find, because they've obviously seen it 1,000 times, and when they're slightly bored or uninterested in it, that actually is quite comforting because you realise just how normal you are.
Exactly.
And it can be very reassuring.
Yeah.
When they sort of lifted the baby out, once Richard had fainted or whatever, he had to get over that. Presumably, he was too small for you to hold, or I mean, how did that work?
Yeah, when they're with my first and second baby, I didn't hold them, and they're born. They go straight into an incubator, and they start giving them assistance with their breathing and check things. They do things like check to see if there's any bleeding on the brain and any other traumas that can happen to early babies, and then it's just a matter of starting to fatten them up, and so I normally, with those two, I went straight into trying to get my milk started and trying to express and all this kind of thing, because when you've got a very heavily medicalized birth in terms of your baby and you, it just gave me something to focus on.
Yes.
that I felt was the one thing I could do that the doctors couldn't do.
Nature taking its course.
Yeah, exactly. But also just gave me a role. Otherwise, it was the one thing that always meant I was a new mum.
Yeah.
And it's not very easy, actually. And when Kit was 3 days old, they found out, basically, it's quite common for premature babies to have partially collapsed lungs. It's just quite a normal thing with their tiny little lungs trying to develop.
Yeah.
So that happened to Kit on the first day, and they'd helped him out with all of that. But then by 3 days, he just wasn't really tolerating his feeds. And they couldn't really work out why. And then they realized it's because his other lung had collapsed. So they had to put him on full respiration and morphine. So he was just like, poor little maggot, we couldn't pick him up or anything like that. So he was in a box for a week on this full respirator. And so for that, I was still expressing milk, but he wasn't having any. So I felt actually quite, yeah, just quite useful. It just gave me a thing I could focus on that meant I was still somehow connected to him.
And did you find breastfeeding difficult? How was it for you?
Breastfeeding, well, babies don't have a sucking reflex till they're 36 weeks. Sometimes it happens a little bit earlier, but they literally can't feed from you before then because they haven't learned how.
Yeah.
So that always came a little bit later. And with Sunny, my first, it had actually been fine. I'd managed to keep my milk going well enough that when I was feeding him, it was all fine. But with Kit, I'd had a massive supply and obviously this backlog when he was unable to eat anything. So I'd put it all in the freezer and we were fine for a while. But actually when he finally came home, I couldn't keep up with him actually. And I think, I really think they'd given me like maybe not the best advice because I was sort of doing it, I think, every 4 hours. But now that I've had 3 full-term babies, I know what a machine they are. They're so clever. And actually they're kind of getting your milk stimulated for weeks, you know, like the first sort of 6 to 8 weeks, you just got a baby on your boob like all the time. So
just a cow, really.
Yeah, exactly. But I've been doing it the same way around the clock with the breast pump, and it just didn't match Kit. So I think I felt a bit lousy, really. So I managed to sort of limp my way through to, I think, 3.5-4 months, and then I just had to stop. I couldn't keep it going.
Well, that's the most important bit, really, isn't it? So, you know, at least you've got that.
Yeah,
one.
Or anything. Actually, you know what? I mean, you can't look around a room full of adults and work out who's been breastfed and who's been bottle fed.
Nope.
I actually think you could feed them bottles from, it's actually most important about what makes you feel good. So I felt useful that I'd done the beginning bit, but honestly, like, no judgment at all with anyone doesn't want to do it or can't do it. It's sometimes really hard. I mean, even with my third, I've cried loads of tears over finding it tricky to breastfeed over the years, definitely.
Yeah, I found it very traumatic. And in fact, mentioning Peter's wife, Annie, she was the first person who kind of helped me understand how to do it. And before then, I don't know, I just never understood. I just didn't understand how you did it. And then she explained it to me and showed me. And then all of a sudden, after that, it got easier and I was able to do it. But it's tough. And I think whatever gets you through it is absolutely fine.
I agree. And actually, you want to hug those people, don't you, that help you?
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. Well, they're like, they want her so to marry important. Me. Yes. Just on the subject of your recovery, how did you find recovering from a cesarean? Was it okay?
I've got better at it. What a weird
thing. The expert now.
Well, I think as well, like, the fact that I wasn't in very good health with Kit meant that it wasn't very quick. But yeah, now I find like the last one was definitely like the easiest one. Mm. But I think it's, you know, it's slightly luck of the draw as well. Because you are actually, as I was helpfully told when I was midway through my fifth pregnancy, your risk of things going wrong escalates quite quick after 4. But I don't know why that doctor told
me. Really? After 4 children?
After 4 C-sections. It just, the risk of blood loss or damage to organs. And in fact, she is also the same doctor that asked me if I wanted to be sterilized at the same time I gave birth.
Nice.
Yeah, really nice.
Get that done.
Yeah, exactly. She was so matter of fact. I was like, wow.
Wow.
Anyway.
Oh, well, not really sure what to say to that.
I know, but you do walk out of some of those meetings in a bit of a daze, and you're like, did someone really just say that to me?
Oh, yeah, no. And also, I mean, your brain goes, well, with the martial arts and the baking the pie, your brain goes a bit haywire.
It does.
So you might not be quite as on it as you ordinarily would be.
No. And there's some bits of being pregnant I really, like, I got so obsessive about cleaning and tidying.
Yeah.
Particularly in my last pregnancy. I'm like, it was like a superpower. Or like someone had been, you know, like when someone's been hypnotized, like whenever you hear this music, you'll think you must tidy out some weird drawer you've never looked in for like 8 years.
I suppose it's a form of nesting.
I know. And it's really useful. And I kind of miss it.
You haven't got it at the moment, then?
No way. No, leave those drawers. Leave those cupboards.
What was a moment from any of your births that you hold as that lovely kind of euphoric, we've done this, we've got this moment? Have you got some?
I've got them from all of my babies. I mean, I think the first time I looked at and Sunny in the incubator, it was incredibly powerful. I felt like, you know, you gear up so much to have a baby, and then I realized I hadn't had a baby. I'd had Sunny, whoever he is, and he just happened to be a baby when I met him.
Yeah.
And I felt that really strongly. Like, I just had to learn how to discover who he is and help him, you know, help him become him, really. And then I think the second thing I thought of is when I had my third, because he was full term. So he was this big chubby baby. Mm. And we spent our first, you know, when he was first born, and we had the first night together, and just that really lovely glow of just holding your chubby baby in your arms, and it's just delicious. I love it. I love the newborn bit like that. It's gorgeous.
Well, you must love something about it, having done it so many times.
Yeah,
I think you're the record for both series.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, come
yeah.
on. There's women out there that have done more.
Not yeah, not,
they're not
that
as
have
crazy
appeared on this on this show.
No,
so I'm
sensible.
Very impressed. Mm. So as an expert, the expert in birth, if you could go back right to the beginning and give yourself a piece of advice, what would you tell yourself?
Oh, blimey. What would I tell myself? You know what? I don't know that it would work, because I think having such an unexpected beginning to having a baby, and so one that went so opposite to what I'd planned, in a way that's quite a good introduction, because that's so much of parenthood. It's so much more reactive than I realized. It's not about the plans you make. It's about how you respond to the information you're getting, and
yes,
where you're
true.
At each day, and the person you've had. You know, my children are not the same person over and over. They're all really different, and they need different things from me, and they respond to different things from me and people around them. And I think in a way you kind of need that. You need that like beginning where you have to learn that. I don't know if I would have understood it if someone had told me.
No, and I think you're right, because this is a bit of a trick question, because what I always do with these pieces of advice is something like type them up on bits of paper and take them back to the village where I grew up and pin them on the notice board on the rec that no one goes to. So yeah. No one will ever see them, because I feel like we don't have advice. We only have stories. And we learn as we go along.
Absolutely. But I think, you know, one thing as a more practical bit of advice, someone did tell me quite early on to always accept help. And I actually think that's a good one. I think when you're trying to do it all, you can feel like you're being a bit silly if you say yes to help, whether it be, you know, helping get your buggy through a doorway or carrying it up the stairs, or giving you a bit of, you know, an extra pair of hands, getting supper ready, or any of those things. But actually, just say yes. Just say, yeah, yes. That's great. Thank you.
Help is always welcome.
Yeah, even
always.
Yeah, always.
Well, thank you very much for being such a tremendous guest and sharing your not just expertise, but also the, you've had a really tough journey, I think, but seem remarkably upbeat about it. So it's rather inspirational.
Well, it's not so tough. It's not so tough. You know, there's loads of ways to start a family, and that's just what happened to us, you know. And the kids, you know, if I put them in a lineup, you wouldn't guess those two as being the premature two anyway, you know.
They've
done really well. So it's just what happened.
Well, that's a lovely, upbeat note to end on. thank
Excellent.
You very much. It was really lovely to talk to you. And
lovely to speak to you too.
And just as a quick plug for your own podcast, Spinning Plates, which is fantastic and is about, well, I mean, you'll explain it better than me. It's about mums talking about how they juggle.
Yeah, ostensibly. I mean, basically, we have all have in common that we work and we're mums. But actually, the main thing we have in common is we're women. And it's just been a really nice excuse to talk to some really cool women from all different fields about, I don't know, I suppose I spend a lot of time thinking about family life and my work life and trying to kind of recalibrate it in my head for how I've done it. just basically listening to other women helped me give myself permission to do all that, I suppose.
Well, I think it's great. And here's to always talking to and about cool women.
Exactly, exactly. Hear, hear.
Thanks so much for listening to One Torn Every Minute. Hope you enjoyed Sophie's tales of giving birth. See you next time.
Hi there, I'm Yasmin Akram. Join myself and my friend Philippa Dunn each week for our podcast, We Heart Worry, a show about cars and their engines. Obviously not. It's a show where we talk about our fears, our worries and our anxieties in a bid to help you with yours. And we just have a laugh as well. So join us. There's nothing to be scared of. I promise.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.